Hi, I'm Susan Clark.
And I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
Welcome to the Beauty of Conflict podcast. Have you ever wanted to take some of what you've learned on the podcast to the next level? Well, check out our new step-by-step, easy-to-use team kit to get your team from avoiding conflict to discovering the beauty in conflict.
To learn more, go to www.thriveinc.com/teamkit. That's www.thriveinc.com/teamkit. Hi, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
Today, we have a special guest with us, Meg O'Connell, founder and CEO of Global Disability Inclusion. Meg works with global 500 companies, foundations, universities, and nonprofits to provide strategic direction, design, and implementation of disability employment and inclusion programs. A few of her notable clients include Arrow Electric, Cummins, Michaels, NCR, P&G, Starbucks, the Society of Human Resource Management, and the Open Society Foundations. She serves as a board member to the global nonprofit United States International Council on Disabilities, which is dedicated to ratifying the Convention on Rights for People with Disabilities, the FDR Memorial Legacy Committee, and the Wheel Chariot, an app that rates accessibility of public places. Meg is a regular requested keynote speaker at home and abroad. She is conversationally proficient in American Sign Language.
Wow.
So thank you.
Yes.
I love it when people whip out some sign language.
I just tried to sign her. I think that thank you. Is that
That's
right?
Thank you. Yes.
My niece did a year of American Sign Language too. So that's neat.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome, Meg. We're excited to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me on the show. I'm a fan. So love what you guys do. And even the title of your podcast is brilliant. So I just love how you guys are digging in deep, creating better workplaces, better conversations. And so thank you.
Yes.
I want to kick this off. One, to tell you that when I actually saw some statistics you shared, I was really struck by that. And then also, there is a little story I also wanted to share before you say, just because of some experience we had. But in what she shared with us, you said 90% of companies look at gender initiatives, 75% at race and ethnicity, but only 5% of companies look at disability as a diversity segment. Now, I found that just shocking to hear. Although I will say we do some experiential work with executive teams and leaders in different companies. And we have this one experience where there's a possibility that someone on one of these teams is going to be blindfolded. And every time we do this and we blindfold someone, they are like taken out of the team. They take themselves out. The team takes them out. And it's always having to say they still have ears. They still have the resources.
Right. Gentleman that had experienced, had done the experience, but because he made a mistake, he was blindfolded. And he just shut down and the team thought of him as an inert object. And I can imagine that happens. But
that really struck me, especially when I was reading this. I was like, I could see this is how it all starts, where people don't even get it because that's a bias that's incredibly...
They don't. And what's even more shocking about that statistic is that disability, it's the largest diversity segment. 10% of the global population are people with disabilities. And in the U.S., it's larger. It's 26% of the population. Wow. So one in four adults has some form of disability. And we're just not having really good conversations about that and what that means in our workplaces. And that's what we're working to change.
Can you define for our listeners when you say disabilities? We can think of a wheelchair, but I imagine it has, much broader than that. So could you just anchor that for us?
And the definition of disability has expanded so much since the anniversary of the ADA, which we just celebrated last month, 33 years. It used to be the big buckets like seeing, hearing, walking, something that limits a major life activity. And those were the big buckets. But now we know so much more about the brain and how people process information. So 20 years ago, we weren't really talking about autism in the same way that we are now about people who are neurodivergent. So it includes brain disorders. It can deal with digestive disorders, anything that you can think of. Likely falls into it if it impacts the way someone works or the way that someone lives or if they need some assistance. And we also know that 80% of disabilities are on scene. So like for me, I have epilepsy. You would not know that by looking at me, right? So when we talk about our workplaces, often companies say, not that we're not hiring people with disabilities, we just don't have any people with disabilities that are working here. Yeah, I'm glad you're laughing. And we're like, no, probably we're in a room with 20 people, four of them are going to have a disability, whether it's a learning disability or a neurological disability or behavioral disability. It could be any number of things.
That is amazing. Yeah, I agree. And I was thinking probably both in our different ways would qualify having a neuro. For me, I have a limbic system impairment. I have a brain injury and that creating a highly sensitive nature.
And yeah, so that qualifies. That,
yeah. And I wouldn't think that.
I guess I was dyslexic and all sorts of learning disability things growing up. Now, granted, that was just a weird experience in and of itself. It may actually be something we're talking about now,
considered a disability.
But I do think that's actually also part of the challenge is how to have conversation around it in a broader spectrum versus trying to, okay, we have to, this is, because I think what happens is people think, oh, how are we possibly going to achieve these initiatives, we're going to have to change everything we do. And it's missing the point about what inclusive measures mean.
Absolutely. And people get so overwhelmed of, oh, it's going to be so expensive. And we just need to think about it. And there's a term, universal design, creating spaces that work for everyone is essentially what that means. So not having accessibility be an afterthought, whether it's your buildings or digital accessibility or just being open to different ways that you run the meetings, right? We all got really smart on these Zoom calls during the pandemic and just the simple act of adding captions to all of your meetings. So people can pick up on those things and use them. And it's great for maybe people that didn't catch what someone said, they can now see it in the caption, or it provides a transcript of the meeting. So everyone's got a recording of detailed action items. So what are the things that we can be doing to make sure that they work for everybody? Another great example is we've all been in those meetings, right? Where somebody walks in, here's a 20-page PowerPoint, flip through it, and now let's have a meaningful conversation about it. Well, people that someone who's dyslexic may need more time with the document than that. Somebody who has a learning disability may need more time as well. So respecting the way people process information and having better conversations because you're giving people things in advance, right? You're not catching them off guard.
I really do appreciate what you're saying. And I think it can bump up against what can happen. I know sometimes is people think, oh, it's going to become a legal issue because we didn't hire the right diversity or whatever else. Versus, I even think of how sometimes when we talk to HR people, you can't ask those questions when you're interviewing. And we always say, you can't ask them when you're interviewing. But once somebody's on a team, you need to be able to talk about what do you need? How do you address that you do have? There is a difference here. I don't know.
And absolutely. And we had some new legislation that came out in 2014. It's weird to say it's new since it's 10 years old, right? That really brought forward asking the disability question on applications. So we've got federal contractors and subcontractors that are now asking the disability question. It's a yes or no. You don't have to fill it out. But the federal government wants us to really start tracking who we're hiring, why we're saying no to people with disabilities if they weren't qualified. And it's really catapulted the disability conversation because we're having it earlier and more often. And then once again, when you're onboarded, they're asking about disability. Do you need an accommodation? And the other piece is the majority of disabilities are acquired. Only 17% of people are born with disabilities. We all age into it, or disease, illness, sickness, whatever. And so we have to be prepared for those conversations in the workplace because it may not be, you may not be disabled when you start, but you may be disabled 5 years from now or 10 years from now. You have are diagnosed with MS or whatever the case may be. So companies are working to get smarter. We still have a long way to go, that's for sure.
I still want to go back to, because your comment about the captions in a meeting, because so often people are like, we're not efficient. We got to go fast. And hear just what you said. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I hadn't thought of turning on the captions for people to track and be able to see. The sensitivity, people expect people to, at least the white normative patriarchal culture, expects extroverts and quick thinking and speaking up. And that's such a demand on people that process differently. That kind of was percolating in my head after you said it, and how I see meetings being run not with that in mind, and how much that would be helpful.
And there's a quote, I'm going to get it wrong, but it's something along the lines of good leaders pay attention to the quiet people in the room. Because there are always the loud voices in the room. They're always going to be talking, but making sure that you're giving space for the people that are introverts, that are not going to be super smiley and engaging, but are deeply thinking about a problem or a solution that you have. And we really try to encourage the leaders that we work with to pay attention to everyone in the room, not just people that are willing to raise their hands and speak up.
I was thinking about this. We were speaking to someone else who their area was around neurodiversity in particular, and the whole use of the word neurodiverse versus autism or spectrum or disability.
Yep.
The languaging can be such a big thing too, because the word disability implies disabled. And not that I hate to become a word person, but I do, because sometimes I think all of that just gets in the way of actually.
Yeah, you're right. It can. It certainly can. And that word evolved because there was so much emphasis on autism and autism hiring initiatives, which was fantastic. But then you had people who were dyslexic or had learning disabilities saying, wait a minute, you're leaving me out. You're having an autism hiring. Why aren't you hiring us too? So it turned into a neurodivergent movement. And so the language can be tricky, and you highlighted disability, and that has evolved. I've been doing this work for 25 plus years, and it was very much person first language, a person with a disability, and not talking about the disability or the condition. And what's happened over time is we've got the millennials and the Gen Zs that grew up with the ADA and it's very much part of their lives, have started these movement of disability is not a dirty word.
I am
disabled, and it's okay to say someone is disabled. It's not considered derogatory. Let's take that back and own it and be proud of who we are and what we can do, and not pay attention so much at what we can't do. You gave at the beginning with the guy with the blindfold. Everybody was focusing on now that he can't see. And does that mean he can't contribute anymore? And it is no. We have to stop thinking about a disability as the whole person and what else they've got and they bring to the table, regardless of whether they can see or walk or whatever.
I love that. Take back the word. That's for sure. That makes total sense to me. And was trying to, because often think of someone who's disabled, often has other abilities that most of us
are missing.
So it's almost, I just keep thinking of, it's really not disabled. It's diversely, I don't know, but it's like having that conversation. And I just even being able to talk about it makes a difference, because I think sometimes we have these things, but we can't talk about this. And then it just totally leads to problems.
Misinformation or misconceptions or assumptions. And the more we can have conversations about disability and in a meaningful way, I think everyone's so afraid of saying the wrong thing, or I feel awkward, and all of those things that we hear about, especially in our trainings. We want to be treated just like everybody else. Come up to me and say hi, shake my hand, tell me what your name is. What do you do? Same thing. People with disabilities, there's a t-shirt I saw somebody wearing who's a wheelchair user, and it says, keep calm, it's only a wheelchair. Don't be afraid of the disability.
When you start to work with a company, are there simple things that, or common things that you see people not doing, and that even people who are listening might be able to go, oh, we could do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a long time in corporations, disability was part of their foundations or their philanthropy work, and disability wasn't really looked at as part of a talent solution or a customer service program or things that we should be thinking about. And so we're starting to see that change. And when we work with companies, one of the first places we start is, I've got an HR background, so that's what I gravitate to, is your policies, your programs, your procedures, your infrastructure. What does that look like? And how are you including people with disabilities? And that runs the gamut. We look at EEOC statements. You'd be surprised how many leave out disability in them. We look at onboarding, recruiting. How are you thinking about, do your recruiters know how to get a sign language interpreter if somebody says they need one for an interview? So what are the steps that people have to go through within the organization to be disability inclusive, and how can we shorten that timeline so that, because we know what happens in the recruiting example, if someone needs an accommodation, you got a hiring manager that says, I want 10 resumes on my desk by Friday. One of those people you've talked to says now they need an accommodation. The recruiter doesn't readily know, and this is universal, unfortunately, doesn't readily know where to go. Oh, I haven't had to ask for one for a year. And then the person I worked with, they've left. That person's resume gets set aside while, oh, we'll go back later and figure that out. Then they get to their 10 and those 10 get handed off. And the person with the disability didn't even get a shot because the recruiter didn't know how to find an interpreter. The accommodations process is also something we look at, and it is dramatically failing in most corporations. It takes too long. People don't know the channels of how to get things done. I talked to a woman last week who said she requested an accommodation December 2022 and still has not gotten an answer yet.
Oh my gosh. Wow. She's an employee of the company?
Yeah.
Wow. That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you look at those things where the employees are being touched, and how are they considering people with disabilities in their training and whatever programs they've got? We help them have that lens in the work that they do.
Yeah. And just, I was thinking bigger companies hopefully could, because you have some big ones on here like P&G, and they would have the resources, hopefully, if they had the planning to have an interpreter or whatever, those types of things. And but I'm thinking even smaller companies, that would be like, what? Like a two-person company.
Small and mid-sized companies are actually easier.
Really?
You're a decision maker in small to medium-sized companies. You've got a lot of navigation at some place like P&G, and P&G is doing amazing things, but it takes so much longer to get things done because it's a large ship to steer. You can get to decision makers much more quickly at small to medium-sized companies.
Well, I was thinking about that. We worked with a large tech company that had a accessibility. We worked within their accessibility area. But what was interesting was the challenges they had, because they really did not, they had to totally use influence to get anything accomplished through the...
They were trying to influence the design of the software.
So that it could be accessible for others. Yeah. And it's just interesting to hear the challenges that they had to go through to even
pay attention to these coders. We need to make
talk. Absolutely.
For sound.
And you're right. The size of that company made it much harder to have that kind of movement.
Now, that was 10 years ago. Yeah. So I think it's moved.
It got ingrained. It got built into their systems much better. So I think it is.
Back to your earlier point, because we see the iconic wheelchair symbol everywhere, people think, oh, we're not worried about ramps. We've got all the ramps in our building. That's all we need to do. They're not thinking the digital accessibility of people with not just people that use screen readers, but people that have low vision or are colorblind, or maybe their hearing's going and every video needs to have captions on it as well. So when you're promoting whatever part of your business, the most people have the access to whatever it is that you're offering.
I can see how that would be tricky. And then there, like you said, so many disabilities can be hidden. So you may not even know what the person needs if you don't know to even think to have the conversation. And I might, but I'll try you out. I wouldn't know if someone, if you said to me, and I was your boss, I have a disability and told me what it was, I'd be like, okay, I don't know how that impacts you. So then is it okay for me to ask you like how to have, because I think some people just get stuck. I don't even know how to go here because it's going to. And
we advise folks, you're never going to be an expert on every disability type, right? So you're likely going to have questions, but we advise people keep your questions around the workplace. You don't need to ask about medications or what any of those things, but great. Thank you for sharing with me. Do you need any supports in the workplace? Is there anything? And in my case, I never need an accommodation. I just wanted people to know. So if I had a seizure at work, they knew what was going on and that I'd probably be going home shortly after.
Or I think of people who use, because I know sometimes I have a friend who has, I think it is epilepsy, but they have a dog that always comes with them because the dog will pick up the signals. And so that's another whole thing in buildings.
That would be possibly an accommodation. Right. I need to bring my dog.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's a little more like companies have gotten used to that for certain things. Although I don't know how the emotional response pets, that's a whole different thing that has been blown up in certain like airlines and things like that. And I don't know if that's a disability when someone has
an emotional support dog. Would that fit into?
They have the airlines and they had to crack down on it, right? Because the bad actors in that space were just phenomenal. Oh, I've got to bring my pet on my vacation and I don't want to have to put it under the plane and all of that. And then, of course, the wild animals that were coming in, the emotional support iguana and things like that were coming out of the world. So they really had to make that distinction between the animal has to be providing a service of some kind. It can't be just that it makes you feel less anxious or comforted. And they did that because of so many bad actors. We see less of that in the workplace, especially now with the hybrid work arrangements and people working remotely, which is a key benefit and one of the reasons why people with disabilities, we are employed at a higher rate than we have been in 15 years because of remote work now. That's now that there's this push to return to the office, people with disabilities are like, hey, time out. This is working for me and I'm just as productive or more when I don't have the commuting tax time anymore that takes so much out of me just physically getting to the workplace. So we're definitely seeing some pushback on that, but it'll be interesting to see where it lands in that debate between, it's hurting our culture too. And everybody else is saying, no, it's actually a commercial real estate problem, not a culture problem, right? Because large companies have these massive campuses with 10, 20-year leases, and they don't want those buildings empty.
Of course, that makes perfect sense when you put it that way, and money makes the world go around in the United States, of course.
I'm curious, I know you work in the globally in the workplace. Do you also work in the educational space? Because that's another whole, or is that considered part of the initiatives that you cover?
It is. We have done a few university projects, and I find those, and I'll just put it out there, to be more challenging than most organizations, because there's no, in corporation, the buck stops somewhere.
Yeah.
And at the college and university level, there's the board, there's the dean of this school, the dean of that school, there's the president, but then there's the diversity council. And it's like everyone has equal power and decision making.
Yeah,
so it's really difficult to get anything done. But colleges and universities overall do an okay job, especially for students with disabilities. All college campuses have disabled student service office that helps get accommodations, whether it's note takers or readers or special equipment. So they do a pretty good job and they are overloaded. I will tell you that.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
One thing you said, you've done global research on the state of disability employee engagement, and not one category did employees with disabilities rate their experience better than other people? Can you share about that? All experience is bad. like less than?
It's when you look at the big categories of achievement, meaning I feel like I can get promoted, leadership, diversity, I feel like I belong, all of those categories, people with disabilities were well below their non-disabled colleagues. Wow. And in some instances, we saw gaps of 10, 12, 14 percentage point difference in their workplace experience. So a typical call to action is only a 5 percentage point gap. So we have double and triple that in most cases, and nobody's paying attention to it but us, right? So we partnered with Mercer to look at this data globally. And it's just, that's how we came up, got the 5% and the 90% gender and 75% ethnicity, and only 5% are looking at disability. It's because people are not even putting in the demographic questions, are you someone with a disability in our workplace?
Wow.
So we have every other demographic, but not disability. So you've got the largest diversity group getting the least amount of attention from corporations.
So that I just want to, because I think this also maybe speaks to another issue. So I think what you're saying is these are being filled out within companies, but people won't even say they're disabled.
They won't even ask.
So the only people who might say it, you're getting a very skewed perspective. It could even be way worse, or it actually might be better, but they're not about to say I'm disabled, because that could
be
a flag.
So it's both. But first, you're right, Chris Marie, the companies aren't even asking that as check the box and the demographics when you fill out, I'm a woman, I'm in this age group, whatever. Disability isn't one of those things that they ask. So that's only 5%. And Mercer's got 12 million data sets we sifted through for this. So only 5% of companies even ask the disability question. And we know now that companies are starting to ask it more, the average disclosure rate in the U.S. is only 4%. So you only have 4% of the population even willing to disclose their disability because they don't feel safe. They feel like, oh, I'm not going to get the great projects anymore. In my career, I was a consultant for a number of years at a big firm and traveled a lot. I had somebody who didn't want to travel with me anymore when they found out that I had epilepsy, because they said they didn't want to be responsible for me. And I was like, you're not going to be responsible for me. And he was like, what if you have a seizure? And I was like, what if Bob, who you travel with, had a heart attack? You would call 911. That's all you would do for me too. You don't need to do anything else. People have very come to the disability conversation with their own baggage. So that's what we're trying to do, is make it easier. Don't bring your baggage to whatever you've got around disability. Let's sift through it and work through it together and find out what you would really have to do when you travel with me.
Yeah.
And in all the years we worked together, not once did I have a seizure.
That comes back to that earlier point. Like, a lot of times people see one thing. Like, I've watched people who in a dining area or something, and the person with the wheelchair, they're all trying to, should I make room? Should I do this? And they don't spend half that time being interested at all in some of the other things they do, where they bump people out, knock people. And the person in the wheelchair has quit taking care of me. It's 9 times out of 10. They're like, I know how to do this piece. And so we have so many weird dynamics that we go through when we see, oh, I'm going to have to be more responsible for this person, as though they're not able. And they are able. They want help. It's like seeing a woman crying and thinking, oh, I got to take care of her. No, she may feel great about crying. And that's exactly.
And her happy tears.
I did cry in front of a CEO group, and they were all, because my brother had passed away. And they thought, oh my gosh, now we have to take, like your guy that said, oh, now I have to take care of you. I'm like, no, you don't. I am very capable. I'll wipe my tears and we'll go on. But that's what struck a chord. And
But
there's such a, I think it's this, when you're talking about these experiences, it seems like our culture is so into invincibility, power, and don't be human, basically. And we are human and can still so much contribute to the world. But when you talk about, like, people with disabilities not rising in leadership because they don't fit the part of what
Or we have leaders who don't disclose their disability because they don't. And in our work, we've found that individual contributors and people early in their career are more apt to disclose their disability, but people later in their career and with more power don't disclose their disability because they're fearful. Oh, they're going to think of me as not a strong leader. They're going to think of me that I can't take this high pressure role on or whatever. We do know that, as with every other diversity group, we need to see people like us in positions of power. And we need leaders talking about their disabilities in a meaningful way so they can be the example for everyone else.
That's powerful. Wow. Meg, we could talk to you. It's such a rich conversation. Yes. And I so appreciate the work you're doing. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with? And then we'll ask you how they can contact you. But any tidbits that you want to make sure you share?
Just when we talk about disability employee engagement, and from that research study, we created the first ever disability climate survey. So it's 40 questions that companies can give to their employees to find out how it's working for them, how those policies, programs, and procedures are impacting them, and what their satisfaction is. So we'd love companies to join us on that journey. We run the survey twice a year, so we'd love to have folks participate with us.
Excellent. Great. And so how can people go there, sign up for your survey, find out more about you and your organization and your work?
Visit our website, globaldisabilityinclusion.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Meg O'Connell. And you feel free to email me, meg@globaldisabilityinclusion.com.
Excellent. Okay. Oh, it's a delight. And I think you're doing such important work. Yes. So thank you for being on our show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Susan here. As a coach, a lot of my time is spent helping clients speak up in a direct and honest way in their relationships at home and at work. Chris Marie and I decided to create a speak up kit to help you do that for yourself. It's the best of our best work that we've gathered to help you. To learn more, go to thriveinc.com/speak up. That's www.thriveinc.com/speak up.